It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Everybody, welcome to another edition of Wrestling Remembered. I'm your host, Joe What a Day Lowry. Happy Friday out there. TGIF, WrestleMania Eve. And what better topic than to choose a good one? And since it's officially WrestleMania weekend, why not take a look at what started all in looking back at the inaugural WrestleMania? But first, with me are always, we are minus one tonight, but we still have two esteemed colleagues in the house. First up, he is my brother from another mother, the poet laureate of the Monty and Farrow channel and a worthy challenger for my undisputed the 30 championship. Let's welcome Mr. Benny Scala, aka the player. Hey Benny.
Glad to be here.
Excellent, excellent. And of course
24 hours till a big event. I am stoked.
Yeah, this is great. Well, it kicks off in a few minutes with SmackDown and the Hall of Fame, and we're off and running, baby.
Yeah,
this has
been
a crazy week as already. So looks like the president is not with us tonight. He's on assignment in Worcester, Massachusetts.
Worcester.
I do believe he's at Polar Park watching the Woo Sox. More on that later. But finally, he is the Thursday Night Disciple, the man who wears the pinstripes on wrestling's hottest game show, The 30. And believe it or not, in high school, he once ordered a pizza and shared it with the entire class. That's right, folks. Let's welcome to the show, Bruce.
Oh, spreading rumors like that. I wasn't that generous.
There you go. What's happening, Bruce? What's going on this Friday?
What's going on? You don't have to be nice to me just because you got that title.
No, it's all good.
I realized today, this is the third week in a row, correct, that you've had that title?
I do believe so, yes, because I had it when we had co-champions, right? For some reason, we had the co-championship last week. So, wow, that's 3 weeks. Wow, not bad. What is the record? Four? What is the record? Do we know?
No, the record is three now.
Three? No kidding. Jeez.
You tied the record? Oh.
Wow.
Benny, you better bring it next week.
Yeah. We got to do something. We got to do something next week. But I want to say hi to everybody in the chat. Thanks for joining us.
What's going on, guys?
Yeah, people joining live and watching live and on the replay. Your support is greatly appreciated. Shout out to Maria Davis. Not sure if she's going to join us. She's getting ready for that bionic knee replacement. Ooh, baby, what's up with that?
Maria, you will be in all of our thoughts.
Thoughts and prayers, right? Thoughts and prayers. So, all right, so we're looking back here. WrestleMania 1, it all started back on March 31st, 1985. And who would have known that 40 years later, this thing would just be what it is today. It's incredible to see how the original WrestleMania that seemed like it took forever. I don't know. I know me and Benny were around back then. Bruce, how old were you during the first WrestleMania? Do you remember that?
I was like 8 years old.
So you remember it then. You have a memory of it then, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It was huge. I mean, I remember the Saturday Night Live, the day 2 days before. I stayed up really late just to see Hulk Hogan and Mr. T on it.
Yeah, yeah. It was the media frenzy surrounding it was really freaked out. Now, a couple of things I want to point out here. The WrestleMania was actually the culmination of what they called the trilogy. This whole thing, the Rock and Wrestling Connection, the WrestleMania, all started back in July 23rd, 1984, with the Brawl to End It All that aired on MTV. You guys remember that at all?
I personally don't. I remember hearing about it, but unfortunately, I mean, you know, I was wrestling wasn't. I was just so little, wrestling wasn't there yet.
Okay. And Benny, what about you? Do you remember that Brawl to End It For It All?
No, I don't actually.
No, okay. Well, the Brawl for It All was a Madison Square Garden show. Don't forget now, in the summer of 84, this is when Cyndi Lauper, Captain Lou was in her Girls Just Want to Have Fun video and all that stuff, and that collaboration started. And what they needed to do is they had to start Cyndi somewhere. So it started with this match that aired on MTV. It was an actual full wrestling card that started out July 23rd, 84. But MTV went live on MTV during the Wendy Richter Fabulous Moolah match. And this is when Wendy Richter actually won her first women's world title. So this started the Rock and Wrestling. This started the movement and so forth. The Hulk Hogan, Cyndi Lauper. You had a lot of celebrities going on. So it all started here. She appeared on Piper's Pit. You remember that when she was on
Piper's Pit?
Yeah. So this is what kind of started it. And in doing the research, this is the episode one of this trilogy. Now, fast forward to, we all remember this, February 18th, 1985, almost a month before WrestleMania, MTV aired a huge special called The War to Settle the Score. This is where I do believe it was Hulk Hogan versus Roddy Piper. Then, of course, Orton and Orndorff interfered. And that's when they recruited Mr. T out of the audience and so forth. Pandemonium struck loose. And that's what started the buildup, believe it or not, for the original WrestleMania. Do you guys remember that night? He tipped the hat off Cyndi Lauper and all that. It was kind of crazy.
Yeah.
I've seen it in you know, through the years, through watching WrestleMania's history. But, you know, as far as when I was live at that point, I was not there for it.
Right. And, of course, we all remember the infamous Dick Clark getting that award and Roddy Piper smashing Captain Lou's.
Over Captain Lou's head,
That was the big turn for Captain Lou where it became good. So that's just like a quick buildup to as to how we get to WrestleMania. Vince McMahon obviously saw the writing on the wall. He knew that the company had to go national. He knew that he was going to have to need celebrities. They needed that mainstream crossover. Now, don't forget, we're going back 84, 85, no internet. No, you know, MTV was probably the closest thing that anybody could relate to as a wrestling fan that, you know, would get in on it. And if you guys remember that War to Settle the Score, everybody was chiming in. Geraldine Ferraro was a political candidate, vice presidential candidate. She chimed in and said something about Roddy Piper. This is, of course, when Roddy kicked Cyndi Lauper with that Lou Albano situation with Dick Clark and Roddy Piper. There was a lot of stuff happening. And of course, they aired it over and over on Championship Wrestling and All-Star Wrestling. And Vince McMahon really knew he had something cooking here. So you know, so WrestleMania was the actual ending of that trilogy, believe it or not. So there were three things. It was the Brawl for It All, which Wendy Richter won. And then she lost her title to Leilani Kai, believe it or not, a couple of months later. And somehow got back into Moolah's hands and then, you know, went back to WrestleMania. But and then, of course, we have the war to settle the score, which really, really boosted MTV's profit margin. There's no doubt about it. They had a lot to do with the Rock and Wrestling Connection. It was a perfect match in heaven. Rock and roll, Hollywood meets professional wrestling. And the rest is history and so forth. But what I'd like to do is just hear you guys. Benny, what is your first memory of WrestleMania 1? Like, what stands out in your mind with WrestleMania 1?
Just the hoopla and the fact that they had so many celebrities. I mean, you had Ali, you had Liberace, you had Billy Martin. Yeah. I mean, that was unheard of. You know, you might have gotten one for an event, but you had all of them.
Yeah.
And I did not remember it until I watched it today, but I forgot that Mean Gene sung the national anthem.
Yep. And the hidden story behind that, believe it or not, Mean Gene sang that last minute substitution because the actual person that was supposed to sing it, who we still don't know who it was, but it was supposed to be somebody famous, actually no-showed the event because they didn't want to be affiliated with that type of environment. Can you imagine that?
Really?
Can you imagine that? So that was a last minute fill in that Gene Okerlund. He did have a little singing background because he did a phenomenal job with it. But now, ESO there, you were 8 when this came out.
Yeah.
So you didn't have a chance to go see it live then at the closed circuit television like we all did. Well, we all had to do. There was no pay-per-view this year. Pay-per-view wasn't introduced till 86. 85, it was strictly closed circuit television, which means you bought a ticket to a major arena, and what happened then was you would actually go ahead and sit at the arena like you were watching wrestling, but it'd be like a four-sided TV screen. It was like a 15,000-plus movie theater.
Yeah, that's what became available finally for WrestleMania 4 was the first time closed circuit was available in my area, and then WrestleMania 5, we finally got the pay-per-views.
March 31st, it's WrestleMania.
Sorry about that.
But I can tell you know, but the one match that stood out to me when I was a kid was the first time I had ever seen him wrestle, and he was such a monster at that point, and that was King Kong Bundy against SD Jones.
Yeah.
So that's what stood out to me.
Yeah,
the five count. It's like, oh my gosh, that guy's scary.
The five count. Yeah. So we get some good stuff here. Real quickly though, I know I was talking to you guys before the show. Now Vince McMahon, this is right the height of Hulkamania. This is when they were wrestling 7, 8, sometimes 9 times a week. And when I say that, it's because they had 2 shows on Saturday, 2 on Sunday. They wrestled every night of the week. They were really going. And I told you guys before, they had 2 house shows at the Garden. 2 of them, March 2nd of 85 and March 23rd of 85. And on March 23rd, 85, Hulk Hogan actually came to town with Mr. T and defeated Don Morocco versus disqualification. And we got these photos from backstage. Here's Mr. T walking backstage with Hogan's belt being escorted back. These were taken backstage. These are actual photos from people from Boston. And here's Hulk Hogan. This is really days away from WrestleMania. And the one thing that stands out with Hogan, look right here, he looks tired. He looks a little haggard. He looks like he's just a little run down because these guys were running. They were gunning 6, 7, 8, 9 times a week. They were wrestling, traveling. You know, Vince was really churning out the money because they would go to shows that were 10, 12, 15,000 plus. And, you know, Hulkamania was running wild. So,
I think at that time, weren't they doing like an A show, a B show, and a C show?
So they some of the stats I'm showing here, like say March 2nd, 1985, there was no Hogan on that card, but they did have Morocco. They had Barry Windham Rotunda actually defeated the Iron Sheik and Nikolai Volkoff that night. Jimmy Snuka defeated Piper. There was all this crazy stuff. Hogan missed that, didn't go to that show, but he was one later on. But there were I know what you're talking about. You had like the ABC squads of that time.
Yes.
The Boston Guard didn't have the patience for that. I know back then, because we knew if Hogan wasn't on the card or something like that, we weren't going. And you could see the attendance.
You got the A card.
The ABC cards really started out in late 86 when WWE went, or WWF went from going to the small arenas, filming in Allentown and filming in Poughkeepsie, to going into the arenas. When they switched over to Wrestling Challenge and Wrestling Superstars, that's when they started to have the ABC shows.
Yeah, and that's when they were getting really big. That's when you knew that there could be a wrestling event within 100 miles of each other, and you get Hogan in one town, and you get somebody else in the other. And they really did it up good. I mean, they were making money. They were really making money. So they're those of you just joining, we are taking a look at back at WrestleMania 1. I'm sorry, Betty, did I interrupt you?
No, well, I was getting, now that I got a chance, though, I did want to say something, you know, that Hogan joined the WWE what, in late 83.
Yeah.
I think it was March 24th, 1983, when he had that match with Bockwinkle at the St. Paul Civic Center, the 25,000, where they, you know, he had the dusty finish and he got screwed.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, about 7 or 8 months later, he jumped to WWF. But, you know, on March 31st, 1985, I believe the AWA was wrestling at the Boylan Catholic High School.
Yeah, we've talked about Podunk, that.
Illinois. So, I mean, just to show what would have happened maybe if they'd held on to Hogan.
Yeah, it was amazing. Yeah, I mean, I think Vern got – I don't think there were any other wrestling shows but that one with AWA that were going on at the time, because a lot of people were sitting back, promoters in general, waiting for Vince McMahon to fail at this. They thought this was going to be too much. It was going to be – overkill with celebrities and glitz and glamour. It put a lot of the traditionalists, professional wrestling traditionalists, like the Harley Races and the Arn Andersons, and I'm sorry, the Ole Andersons and those types of people were like, this isn't gonna go well. People aren't gonna go to this. And boy, were they wrong. Were they wrong at that? So here's a quick
wasn't Vern Gagne already trying to do something too with it, with extending nationally, going out west further? And booking towards the East Coast more. Wasn't he already wasn't he also trying to do a little bit? And that it kind of, Vince did it just better.
Well, Vern had, I believe, Denver. He had Salt Lake City.
Yeah.
He had Las Vegas and he had San Francisco. So, yeah, he was kind of carving a little bit of a path out west.
Yeah. I think what happened is a lot of promoters did feel that Vince was gobbling up territories. And a lot of them got together and tried to create their own territories. I don't want to say territories because Vince at that time, they were traveling coast to coast. By late 84 into 85, they were already flying, you know, matches in Minnesota, matches in Houston, matches in L.A. But I think what they were trying, promoters were trying to do, they were trying to keep their talent intact without going to the WWE. I mean, we didn't see that talent explosion for, I want to say, another year or two, maybe. That's when everybody defected from their territories. And just, it was like the circus was in town where, you know, you got somebody from the NWA or AWA that was making an appearance in a WWE ring at some point at any given time. So right here, we were on the cusp of that, March 31st, 1985. We were on the cusp of that global explosion, as they call it. To me, it was a national explosion because I thought for sure, you know, when I snuck into town and saw this show that, you know, this is either going to succeed or it's going to fail. And obviously we know what happened there, so forth. But this was the match lineup. I don't know if you guys remember this. So not the greatest of cards from what people said. You know, Tito Santana, they had their, for a major event like this, they still had their quote unquote preliminary bouts. Not main event marquee matchups. What do you think? Tito Santana versus the Executioner. Would that sell out an arena?
Wasn't the Executioner at that point Playboy Buddy Rose?
Yes, I do believe so right here. Yeah. That was probably the worst kept secret, especially when it was interviewed by backstage by Gene Okerlund. You could tell it was Buddy Rose. I'm like, they couldn't even find a mask that fit him. Look at his eyes. You could tell it's him. You know? I mean,
he was still a bit on the slim side, though.
He didn't blow up yet. He wasn't blowing up. And it was funny, too, because he wasn't really wrestling full-time with the WWF then. His heyday was really 82, 83 before he went back and forth to the AWA in the Portland territories.
Yeah, he was huge in Portland.
Yep. So he was huge in Portland. another interesting tidbit. Tony Atlas was backstage. Tony Atlas was, as soon as he walked in the door, he was told by Arnold Skolan that, Tony, we were going to use you tonight, but we're not. But we're going to pay you anyways, and you're welcome to hang out. And that's what he did. He hung out backstage. So Tony Atlas was the only wrestler there that got paid for not wrestling, believe it or not. Which I thought was kind of neat. I had no idea what he was going to factor into if he was going to wrestle. Maybe they thought somebody wasn't going to show up from the preliminary abouts because, you know, like I said,
according to him, he was supposed to be in SD's place.
Oh, really? Okay. So that would make sense. But, well, I don't know about that. Where is it right here? I have it somewhere.
Bundy and SD Jones, second match.
Yep. Let me see. King Kong Bundy. Did you know that King Kong Bundy's 9-second match actually lasted 23 seconds?
Yeah, that's really funny because I have in parentheses, I said Bundy wins in 9 seconds. Yep. And I put in parentheses, no way, with an avalanche. Yep. I thought it was close to 30 seconds.
Yeah,
23 sounds right.
Yeah,
that sounds right.
Either way, it was a squash match. I mean, if you went to the bathroom and came back, you definitely you didn't see this match. That is for sure. I mean, I know if I went and you had to go get a popcorn or something, nobody saw that match. 30
SD seconds. Jones didn't even have time to go to the well.
No, it was crazy. I wasn't even sure because it was the second match. If we look at the match card again, it was the second match of the night. If they're going to time this thing out, I mean, I don't understand why they had to put a squash match. They should have let off with that match maybe. Or maybe Tito Santana and the Executioner went on too long. I don't know. Were they already starting to run out of time just on the second match alone? I don't know.
First match was not that long. Tito and Executioner really wasn't a long match.
Yeah, it wasn't that bad at all. And then you let off again with another preliminary match, which I really don't understand why they were doing that. Here it is. It was Matt Bourne, Maniac Matt Bourne, and Ricky the Dragon. Yeah, that's right. And this match, I couldn't even tell you what happened in this match. I don't even remember this match at WrestleMania. I'd have to go back and watch it to find out what happened.
It wasn't a bad match. It probably was maybe 6 or 7 minutes. Right. Ricky won by, climbing up the top rope, flying body press.
Right. So that was pretty good. Let me see here.
It was decent.
Yeah. I mean,
as Jimmy would say, it was serviceable, right?
Yep, serviceable. The whole card was serviceable. I mean, you really didn't get into the
matches were serviceable.
Yeah. Brutus Beefcake with Luscious Johnny B against David Sammartino with Bruno in his corner. Not a bad match. Bruno got a little upset at the end there. Let me get rid of my banner here. He ended up getting wet in there. And I think Johnny V got interfered with as well, but you know, this is Brutus Beefcake's first big match in WWF. You know, he's been around for a few months, hooked up with the manager. He was a Chippendale. This is pre-Barber days. He wasn't Brutus right. The Barber Beefcake then. He was just Brutus Beefcake, Chippendale Dancer, right? Wasn't that a shtick? Something like that?
Yeah, yeah. He wore the little bow tie thingy.
Yep. So he had that.
Yeah, this was not a bad match. I wrote a couple of notes then, but sure. I think he was still a bit green at this point, Brutus. He really wasn't a bad worker, but I think he picked his game up in the upcoming years. And David, I don't know why, but like he really, really tried. Like all of his moves were his dad's, absolutely replicated.
Yeah.
And I don't know that he really should have done that because he wasn't Bruno.
That was it, but he had that name, and that's just something that he could not get rid of, that moniker. You said Sammartino, you were linked with that lineage forever. So yeah, I mean that's a tough shadow to break. I don't care.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, you know what I mean? How do you do that? You're really doomed.
I mean, I just can't. I felt bad for him. I know he didn't last too much longer in the WWF, but he went on to other organizations and so forth, but it didn't pan out. Do you remember David Sammartino, Bruce? You there? Is he frozen? Yep. I think we lost Bruce for a second.
No.
We'll wait for him to get back. We can continue. I'll make sure when he gets back.
And he actually wrestled in other places as Bruno Jr. I really think that was not a good thing for him. I really think he needed his own look. He needed his own moveset. You know, yeah. I mean, he even talked like his father. It was scary. But, I mean, right. Bottom line is, Bruno was still around, and Bruno was relatively young. And people still absolutely – and they love Bruno still. So, he had no chance. But it was – I mean, the people popped when he threw Johnny Valiant in the ring, and they started going at it.
Now, Bruno wasn't really wrestling back at this point. He was still announcing with Vince. He seconded David Sammartino, because I know it was a year later that he had that feud with Piper at Boston Garden and had a huge cage match. And that was my one and only time of witnessing the living legend in person. So, I mean, he went, he got the wrestling bug, I think, again, with training his son, David, and so forth. So it was good to see him in there. He got a huge pop, by the way, when he got sure involved. Did. He was still loved. I think Vince saw that again. Was like, oh, boy, he still has it. So,
I mean, 22 years after he won the title, the people are still going nuts for him.
Yeah, that's just unbelievable. Unbelievable. And after that, we had a lone Intercontinental title bout. I totally forgot this was for the Intercontinental title, but we had JYD, Junkyard Dog, and Greg the Hammer Valentine. This match, Jimmy Hart was the manager and so forth. I think this was like the only title besides the tag title that was up for grabs. And there was only really two title defenses during this show. Three, actually, with Wendi Richter and Moolah. But the Intercontinental title, which is usually second to the WWF Championship, this was like, I don't know, this feud didn't last very long. I think the match was put together within months. They didn't have a lot of heat. Valentine, it looked like a filler match for me. What do you think, Benny?
Yeah, the one thing that, I watched the whole card again today. The one thing I was really hit me was how good Greg Valentine was. As a worker, I mean, he was really the consummate professional wrestler. Yep. JYD was over, but I mean, he really wasn't that good of a worker. He was, I really think Valentine carried him, and they got a good match out of it. I thought that Valentine had won by putting his feet on the ropes and pinning him. I forgot that they reversed the decision and counted out Valentine.
Yeah, I remember he kept headbutting Valentine until he got out of the ring. I remember that was cool. Right. that part I remember. That part I remember.
And the whole gang was singing, grab them cakes.
Yep. That's right. That is right. And then, of course, we go to the tag team championship here. And we all know what happened with that one. The U.S. Express, which ironically is going into the Hall of Fame this weekend. So congratulations to them. Their run as tag team champions came to an abrupt end with this unbelievable duo of Nikolai Volkoff and the Iron Sheik. Of course, a cane was used for this one. I do recall this match. Barry Windham took the cane off to the back of the head there, and the rest is history. What'd you think of that match overall, though, Benny?
It did what it had to do. You knew there was going to be shenanigans, And the other thing that I mean, this is more overall than just this specific match. When you think about like how many managers worked that night. You had Jimmy Hart, you had Blassie, you had Albano.
Right.
Who else did you have? Johnny Valiant. You had Lauper, if you count her. I mean, you had like five managers working.
Yep. You had Wendy and everybody there. It's just, we didn't talk about much, but I mean, the wrestling itself, I mean, wrestling experts said this card was so vanilla wrestling wise. It wasn't about the wrestling for WrestleMania 1. It was about the hype, the publicity, the media that surrounded it. Speaking of media, I mean, this is, if you open up your newspaper back in the day, this is what you saw. You saw full page ads of WrestleMania this and WrestleMania that. Don't forget, no internet back in 1985. This is how they had to spread the word. They had to take out full page ads here. You can call this phone number to order to know where to get tickets and so forth. You have to show up here. And of course, all in all, though, which I was shocked at, Benny, was the fact that of all the arenas coast to coast that watch WrestleMania, it was only 1 million people, they said, that actually watched the show, outside of Madison Square Garden. I know Boston Garden had 15,000 jammed in there. I can't imagine it not being more than 1 million nationwide. Do you think that number still is kind of low, or what do you think?
No, I think only because of the fact that, there were still enough territories in place that the WWF was still considered a Northeast thing.
Sure.
you know, that, obviously that was going to change in the next couple of years. But I think, you know, there were still a lot of promotions. Most of them were still alive and well in 85.
Yeah, I hear you. All right, so we're going to take a quick break here. But when we do return, we'll go over some obscure figures and stories that happened before WrestleMania and during WrestleMania. So we'll be right back. So stick with us. You're watching Wrestling Remembered.
The Monty and the Pharaoh Show is brought to you by...
Because wine is your second favorite four-letter word. California wine, New York attitude. Good fucking wine.
Yeah.
Tired of that same old breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Same old tasting scrambled eggs, burger, that dinner steak, ribs, or pork chops? Why not add a little bit of spice or just a touch of heat to make the difference? Change that scrambled egg with a little bit of Johnny Fabulous's John Cena Sr.'s Million Dollar Jalapeno Hot Sauce. Great on burgers, steaks, chops, and those barbecued ribs.
And Nitro's Garage for all your automotive needs. Call 646-675-2349. That's 646-675-2349. For all your automotive needs, Nitro's Garage. Ask for Jack.
Do you treat your dog as part of the family? Well, so do we. So why not celebrate your pup's birthday with the ultimate party box? Check us out on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Party Pup Info, and let us make your pup's party or any celebration perfection.
M&J Video Games and Collectibles, sport and non-sport cards, wrestling items, autographed items. We buy, sell, and trade. M&J Video Games and Collectibles, located at 1049 Queen Street, Southington, Connecticut. Call us at 1-860-479-9223 or 860-93-GAMES. M&J, Video Games and Collectibles.
All right, as always, I like to say the bills are paid. We are back. You're watching Wrestling Remembered. I'm your host, Joe Winaday Lowry, with a shortened cast all of a sudden. It looks like it's just a Joe and Benny. It's Joe and the Benny show. I don't know if Bruce forgot to pay his Wi-Fi bill. He dropped off like... Should we be concerned with aftershocks in New York City there? I mean, they got an earthquake today.
Oh, I hope not.
What happened over there? So I know he was talking about it earlier, but, you know, that was crazy today. Earthquakes in New York.
Maybe all the stress. Maybe he's just napping.
Unbelievable. I want to give a shout out to Baby Cakes for the donation. That's awesome. Thank you very much. In case you haven't heard, the news broke today at 5 o'clock this afternoon that yours truly will be hosting a post-WrestleMania show live on Sports Kita Wrestling YouTube channel, which is a huge thing, I guess. I was reached out to them this past week, and we solidified all the details this morning. And yours truly will be working over at Sports Kita for the weekend, doing the post-WrestleMania shows with the legendary Bill Apter and Vince Russo. So we're going to be doing discussion on that immediately following both nights of WrestleMania. So if you want to tune into that, that'd be greatly appreciated. But yeah, that was that all came together pretty quick, Benny. I got to tell you.
Yeah, Joe, let me tell you from the bottom of my heart, congratulations, well deserved. You're going to knock it out of the park. And I mean, you're working with some real big hitters there, some legends.
Yeah, it was I knew something was up when my LinkedIn was getting poked around by Sports Kita representatives and CEOs and stuff, and I'm going, "Uh-oh." What's going on here? Then I got the call Thursday from Bill, and then we had a conference call this morning. So it moves fast, you know, just like life, I guess. So I'm very looking forward to it. It's going to be exciting times coming up. So don't worry. My presence will still be felt here on the Monty and the Pharaoh channel. So you'll still get to see my ugly mug and my, you know, my fabulous face for radio, as they say, right?
You got to defend that title every week.
I got to defend that title. That's right. Joe Maya just said, bro, I got to work up on my, I got to work on my bros for tomorrow night and Sunday. Bro. Hey, bro. Awesome. So there was
Outbro the bro.
So there was some crazy stuff I found online, stories or whatnot. But One of the ones that kind of caught my attention was this is true. Moments before WrestleMania started, a group of Hell's Angels on Harley Davidson motorcycles, somehow they managed to get past Madison Square Garden security, entering the backstage area through the loading dock. They were determined to see the show. Now, despite the event completely being sold out, WWF management accommodated their request. I heard Vince McMahon actually did not want to have any type of disturbance whatsoever, so we accommodated these guys, and they brought in a few chairs for them to sit at ringside. What do you think of that, Benny? Hell's Angels, they wanted tickets. They couldn't get tickets, so they just went right in. What do you think of that?
Yeah. I mean, I do think it was the right thing to do to accommodate them. And, I mean, what are you going to do at that point? You don't want a disturbance that close to the event. So that was a smart move, I think.
Yeah, I did a little research on that, too. And the story pans out. There were about five or six of them that they were – big guys, you know, you would have thought they were wrestlers. I'm sure, you know, these biker dudes are pretty big and so forth. But, you know, they wanted to get in. And Vince was so adamant on having this thing go off flawlessly. He didn't want any bad publicity. Imagine that. Vince McMahon didn't want any bad publicity. Well, go ahead.
I mean, that's the other side to this whole WrestleMania is that Vince was, I mean, he was rolling the dice. If this was a bust, well, he was going under, right?
Yeah, I do believe he borrowed $1 million to put this on because he had just bought a couple of years early. He bought the promotion from his father for $1 million and he had to pay, you know, monthly installments with that. Yeah. But to put this show on, he had to reach out to investors and so forth to be like, look, this is my idea. And they fronted the money. So, I mean, it was make or break for Vince McMahon. I mean, we didn't know that at the time. Of course, it's great to hear the stories now. But, I mean, I think I read in somebody's autobiography that Vince, they were at home and they had phones. You know how you can have a phone line in your house? And we're going back to 1985. They had, like, three phones put in their house when they lived in Connecticut because they wanted to get up-to-the-minute revenue, how many people attended this arena, how many people attended that arena. They were trying to get those facts and figures in as quick as they could because there were no computers back then.
Right.
They needed to find out right away. I remember, I think it was Linda McMahon that told the story as well. She was on manning one phone. Vince was on the other and they were just trying to find out how many people attended this one. And, you know, they needed the gate. They needed the receipts, not necessarily the money right then and there, but they needed to find out if this thing was a hit or not. And, you know, obviously it turned out to be a great hit. So, you know, good.
You know, it makes you wonder, though. So he bought the company from his dad in 83. Two years later, he's doing this. It makes you wonder, like, in his mind, how long had he been planning this? I have to think it was like 10 years before that.
I think so. I think I even want to say probably, you think 10 years, really? 74?
I don't know. I mean, at least five maybe. Or
I definitely think in the 80, 81 time frame when he was, you know, he wanted to get his feet wet and his father, I think his father sell him the Cape Cod Coliseum, said, this is your baby. You can do whatever you want with it. And he would put on shows. Yeah, and he was very successful.
Like hockey games and concerts.
Yeah. Cause his father didn't really, I don't know true it is, but from what I've heard, his father didn't have a lot of faith in him running a wrestling organization. Boy, did he prove him wrong. But I think when, that fallout happened with Hulk Hogan and Vince Sr. because Hulk Hogan wanted to go film Rocky III. Vince Sr. said, no, you're going to stay here. And that's when Hulk Hogan said, screw that. I'm going to, you know, I think Vince Jr. right then and there knew the crossover was about to happen. When Rocky III came out and Hulk Hogan was in it, I mean, to this day, I'm still shaking my head as to why Vern Gagne would let something like Hulk Hogan go. Right in the middle of all that, because they filmed Rocky III in 82. The movie wasn't released until 83. So, you know, and Hogan, you know, leaves WWF, goes to AWA, gets screwed out of that, goes and films, you know, all this stuff is, all these things are being juggled. So, yeah, Vince definitely had a vision of some sort that this was going to be, Hulk Hogan was going to be the captain of some type of ship that was going to go down, you know, to the land of crossover to mainstream media. He wanted wrestling on the map. And part of that really makes
you wonder, like, you know, you got to give, I mean, and I'm not a Vince fan. I'll never be a Vince fan. I mean, from an ethics and a morality standpoint, but, you know, as far as being a businessman, he saw clearly the value that Hulk Hogan had that obviously Vern Gagne didn't.
Right. I'm sorry. Yeah, Rocky came out in 82. They filmed it in 81. I'm sorry, B40. You're right. I always get those years mixed up. I don't know why. But yeah, they filmed Rocky 3 in 81. It came out in 82. So it was a big deal. You know, Hulk Hogan was the captain of that ship. So Vince Sartre, lightning in a bottle. You'll never see a promoter slash wrestler do and change the game of any type of sporting event. Just like, you know, I'll throw it out there, Belichick and Brady for 20 years. You know what I mean? Now you have Hogan and McMahon. You get, you know, that longevity thing. They did a lot of work together in creating this spectacle known as WrestleMania. So,
oh yeah,
it's a big deal. So another thing that I saw pop up, where was it? Muhammad Ali. We all know Muhammad Ali was a special guest referee. He was told to stay outside the ring no matter what. Do not get in the ring. Don't ever get in the ring. Yeah. And as soon as the melee happened, what does he do? He jumps into the ring. And there's a good shot I got on the left there. I'm trying to find that photo. If you look over on the left there, Muhammad's throwing his right towards Bob Orton. And somebody took a picture. Somebody took Piper a picture too. Right there. What's that?
I think he hit Piper.
Yeah, he chased Piper right after this. Because Piper, what happened was, is when Ali came in the ring and got physical like this, they didn't know what to do. What Bob Orton was actually trying to do there was trying to bait him to come out of the ring. But when Ali took a swing, Piper actually was like, dude, you got to get out of the ring. And then Ali went after Piper. So, and then George Scott, who is a ringside attendant at Madison Square Garden. I wish I should have grabbed a picture of him, but he was there. He had to actually grab Ali and say, look, you got to get out of the ring. This is for the wrestlers, you know. You're here as the, you know, try to just, I don't even know if they had a team meeting before this because nobody seemed to know anything as to, you know, if you're telling Muhammad Ali, don't quit in the ring and then he gets in the ring, you know, what the heck is that? You know? So I don't know. Crazy.
I thought I saw a couple of times when like a couple of the wrestlers were actually trying to, you know, kind of like shoo him out of the ring.
Yeah.
You're not supposed to be here.
Yeah. Right after he swung at Orton there, because Orton was trying to bait him out. But what happened was Ali took that right hand. He took a swing at him. And then Piper was like, oh, Jesus. Pat Patterson was there, too, trying to push him off to the side.
Yeah.
And, I don't know. That's what happens when you put a former heavyweight boxing champion in the ring like that. He's going to get physical. It's in his nature, I guess, to do that. So, you know, it is what it is.
And he was still, I guess he would have been about maybe 42, 43. Still in pretty good shape.
Yep. Yeah, he was. Yeah, he looked good there. But you could tell his mind was a little... It was starting to happen.
The process was starting.
I could tell there. Another interesting scenario here. Billy Martin, Gene Okerlund interview before WrestleMania was held on Billy Martin's boat. He had a boat somewhere in New York, and they went to film on the boat. And I guess Billy Martin had already been there, and he had a few in him already. And of course, Mean Gene started indulging a little bit, but they were like, "Look, we have to get this interview. We have to get this going." And what it was he was supposed to give a synopsis on the matches and so forth because Billy Martin was the guest ring announcer. But it turned into a thing where Gene Okerlund would just tell him, look, I'll just carry you. I'll just say whatever you comment and that's it. So Billy Martin, yes, I do believe the picture on the right was taken before things got a little crazy with the alcohol. And then the picture on the left is probably on their fourth or fifth take. Of Billy Martin on the boat there. And that didn't leave Vince too happy. He didn't realize that Billy Martin was like to indulge, especially on his boat. But hey, you're coming on my boat. I'm the captain of my ship, right? So what do you think of that?
Fourth or fifth take or fourth or fifth shot?
Yeah, no shit. Yeah, that's crazy. But
it kind of reminds me of Joe Namath and Susie Colbert, you know?
Yeah, no kidding. It does. It's just amazing some of the stuff that you find out with everything here. But I think I already shared this one, but the King Kong Bundy one, as we all know, the 9-second match actually lasted around 23 seconds. You said you think it's closer to 30 seconds, Benny?
I mean, it was at least, I thought it was 25, but I mean, it was definitely not 9. There's no way.
Yeah, it was crazy. And
interestingly, I mean, although Bundy mentioned the 5 count in the pre-match interview with Mean Gene, the referee only counted to 3.
Right. That's true. That is true. I thought I saw somewhere in the chat those were the 5 count. Yeah, he only counted to 3. I think that was a whole shock, though. I mean, like I said, it was the epitome of a squash match, but were they already running out of time in match number 2? I just didn't get that. Never understood it.
Unless they were just trying to, you know, establish Bundy as this huge monster. But I thought he already was established.
Yeah. Now, Andre versus Stud, that was a great match. They actually fought a week before at Boston Garden, believe it or not. But Andre took the bag full of real cash that was in there was real cash in that sat in the WWF Devilful bag. He started throwing it out. He started throwing it around to everybody. And as we all know what happened after that, Bobby the Brain Heenan ran in and grabbed that bag of money because we all know that Andre body slammed Big John Studd. So, and I do believe somebody in the chat was saying this slam wasn't supposed to happen or the pin. I was trying to see who commented on that.
There were no pinfalls in that match. It would either Andre slammed him and Andre won, or the match, you know, if the match ended with that Andre slamming him, then Stud won and Andre had to retire.
Yeah.
But I wonder if anybody knows why, you know, Andre grabbed the money, he grabbed the bag and he started throwing the money. Why Heenan grabbed the bag of money, if there was a reason behind that.
Because it was real money. I think Heenan was like, shit, you're not supposed to be doing that. Because, you know, Andre was probably living the life, the high life at that time, too. You know, he's on the biggest stage of them all. He's in front of millions of people, and he wanted to give the audience a great show. And wasn't he referred to oftentimes? He was called the boss backstage, Andre the Giant. So he did whatever he wanted. And what did he do? He grabbed the money and started throwing out to everybody. And you could tell by people in the ringside area, it was real money. They were grabbing it. So,
yeah, Bobby grabbed that money really quick.
Yeah, a few fans came with a couple of dollars richer. Maybe they got their money back for the ticket they paid, because I do believe I paid $20 for my ticket. I mean, it was scalped, but still, because it was sold out, I had to buy it on the street. But I think they were going for like $10 or $12, and I ended up buying mine for $20. Sat in the balcony and watched at the Boston Garden, so that was kind of neat. But, what else we got here? Let me see.
Matches left.
Let me go back to the match card here. We finished off Andre. The big match, Leilani Kai, managed by the Fabulous Moolah. Leilani Kai had actually beat Wendi Richter a few months back at a house show. That was at the Brawlford, the War to Settle the Score, the one we talked about here. On the undercard of this one back in February of 85 that wasn't shown on TV, Wendi Richter lost her title to Leilani Kai, believe it or not. And so what happened was, is they got back to training and all that stuff. And lo and behold, where are we here? Wendy and Cindy went in the ring. They got it and did what they had to do. And they ended up regaining the championship. It was an unbelievable. I'll show the brawl for it all, because that's them winning the title there. That's not at WrestleMania, believe it or not, when they win the title there. That's kind of neat. So, so that match was a good thing. Cyndi Lauper, Rockin' Wrestling Connection. And I keep forgetting to talk about the guy who probably had absolutely no reason to be there, was Liberace. You know, of all the people that you could get to round out, you got a sports figure, you got a wrestler, you're growing into mainstream, you got the Rockettes there. You throw in Liberace. Where did this one come from? Does anybody know? Out of all the people you could have got, you got Liberace as a guest timekeeper or a bell ringer or whatever he was. What did you think of that one, Benny? Liberace.
I thought it was hideous. I mean, I get Billy Martin. I definitely get Muhammad Ali.
Right.
Liberace.
And he did a great job. There's no doubt about it. Here's more pictures. He was part of that. Yeah. The photo on the right was taken as a WrestleMania publicity photo. You know, it's just a crossover here. Muhammad Ali, Cyndi Lauper, you know, Hogan and Richter on the wrestling side. Then you have Liberace. Like, I was expecting to see like Gene Simmons of Kiss or Ace Frehley or somebody like that. I wasn't expecting to see Liberace, but that to me was quite the spectacle.
Maybe there just to appeal to the older crowd. I think he was 65. Maybe, He was dead within 2 years of AIDS from WrestleMania.
Yeah, that's right. That is correct. That was a big thing back in 85, was the AIDS epidemic. So, you forget about those little things too. But yeah, I talk about it a lot, but to have those mix of personalities and then boom, that's, you know, Liberace. Like, okay, of all the people you could have had, you got Liberace. But hey, and like you said, it might have been something to do with appealing to the older crowd. You know, so who knows?
You know, Joe, also, because you've been mentioning Wendi Richter, you've been very vocal Yeah. Not Wendy Richter. I'm sorry, Cyndi Lauper for being in the Hall of Fame. And when you see, like, I mean, she was heavily involved in this. It wasn't just a token appearance. She was doing all the interviews and cutting all the promos.
It all started with her. When I say that, if you go back to Brawl for It All, which is back in 84, this is the height of Cyndi Mania. Captain Lou Albano was in her video. She was on Piper's Pit. I think it was a few months later that she got an award and Roddy Piper came out and slammed it over Albano's head and Dick Clark was there. And, you know, and that's when David Wolf got body slammed. You know, that was that's what started all this happening. She was the reason behind the Rock and Wrestling Connection. The wrestling was Hogan. The Rock was Cyndi Lauper. There's no doubt about it. How and why she's not in the WWE Hall of Fame to this day just blows my mind. I'll say it all along.
I mean, when you talk about, you know, WWF transcending being a wrestling company and morphing into more of an entertainment company and, you know, grabbing the national spotlight, that does not happen without Cyndi Lauper, in my opinion.
No, of course not. It does not. And I'll go back to the publicity photo there. I mean, look at that. She's with Muhammad Ali, Liberace, Hogan, Richter, and Lauper. That is the personification of rock and wrestling. She was it. And
she was 100% invested in it. I mean, she's chasing Moolah. And, you know, she got physically involved in a match. I mean, she did everything.
She played the role. I mean, when I saw her on Piper's Pit, I'm like, am I seeing things here? Like, why is she on Piper's Pit? And she didn't make one appearance on Piper's Pit. She was on a few times to go ahead and promote the fact that her album's coming out. And then I did Piper called her a broad or something like that and says, what, broad? You don't call me a broad. And, you know, and then all that stuff started happening. And then Captain Lou said, what? He said that he made my career. That's what it was all about. It just generated that excitement. Like, oh my God, somebody in the rock and roll world, or back then it was pop rock, was actually watching wrestling. It's tough to describe to somebody nowadays what it was like back then to see wrestling cross over to mainstream media, because it was just unbelievable what was happening. When you turned on MTV and you saw Madison Square Garden and Roddy Piper and Hulk Hogan going at it with MTV and Andy Warhol and Joe Piscopo and Danny DeVito and everybody being interviewed, that was huge. Absolutely the hugest thing. And Vince made sure we saw it because he replayed those videos over and over for months. So, you know, he did what he did. He promoted the heck out of it. And that's what we get. We get WrestleMania. So,
oh, and I'm sure that lady would want to be honored by the WWE because she deserves it.
Yeah. I just don't understand why she's not. I know, like, you're a big advocate for Ivan Koloff, another head scratcher. I'm a big advocate for Tony Garea and Rick Martel. But when you look at it, we would not be having this conversation about WrestleMania. We would not have had 40 years of WrestleMania without Cyndi Lauper.
Absolutely correct.
And I don't see how anybody around there could argue that. But, and yes, Miss Elizabeth deserves to be in there. China, as an individual, deserves to be in there. There are a lot of deserving individuals. I'm going to watch the Hall of Fame ceremony tonight. I don't mean to switch gears. That is on after SmackDown on Peacock. I will watch it. I'm disappointed that Heyman's being inducted by Roman Reigns, which means we're not going to get any real life scenarios during this Hall of Fame. It sounds like a work. It sounds like a shoot. It sounds like we're going to get the tribal chief inducting his wise man. And it's going to be, it's not the induction you want. You want the honest stories. I'm not saying that Heyman won't share a couple of those stories, but Heyman's knowledge of the business going back to when he was a kid taking photographs at Madison Square Garden to the time he was John E. Dangerously, the cell phone carrying manager, all the way to the inception of ECW. You know, you want those stories. And I don't know if we'll get that tonight. What do you think, Benny? You think we'll get those stories tonight?
I actually think the Hall of Fame induction is going to be, again, underwhelming and kind of like the last two PLEs we watched. But I do think that WWE is going to make up for it. I think tomorrow night and Sunday night are going to be nights that we talk about, you know, from a wrestling perspective for years to come. I really believe that.
Speaking of WrestleMania and the hype and so forth, again, I'm switching gears because that's what I like to do. Anybody catch that fight between AJ Styles and LA Knight at WWE World today? Did you see that fight at all, Benny?
I did. I saw like maybe about 5 seconds of it.
Okay. It started as a shoot, I do believe. It started as a work. And to me, it looked like two brothers just grappling and getting, you know, trying to hype up their fight for tomorrow night. But what it escalated into something bad. AJ Styles got a bloody nose. LA Knight was visibly upset. They were swearing at each other. Whether or not they show up on SmackDown tonight, I'm not sure. But I watched the video over and over. Did it look like something happened in the middle of this thing that, you know, either AJ got a little too aggressive or LA Knight got a little too aggressive? Something ended up happening. If you watch it till the end, it's all over the internet, so I don't have to pull it up on here for you guys to find that. But I do believe it was like two brothers fighting and then it got real. And, you know, they just took a, you know, I'm not going to say a meaningless match of WrestleMania, but they put some hype behind it today. So whatever they set out to do today with this fight probably worked, because that thing is garnering some serious views. And when they tried to break them up, it was pretty heated. There were words exchanged, and you know, it was pretty interesting to see. And as you know, WWE World is similar to what WWE Access used to be. It's a pre-WrestleMania thing where people get interviews and all that stuff. And it's been a real hit this week, especially yesterday with The Rock making everybody wait 2 hours. The Rock was supposed to come out at 4 p.m. Eastern time and didn't show up until 6 o'clock. And people were, I'll say pissed, but that's an understatement. They were making wish people there that were supposed to meet him. They ended up leaving because they had you're in the middle of New York, Philadelphia, rush hour. They had to get to going where they're going. So building heat, as they say, right, Benny?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Michael Cole seemed a bit irked that Rock was late.
Yeah. So the main event, what'd you think of the main event for WrestleMania 1? You said you rewatched it today. Looking back 39-plus years now, what did you think of the overall match between Hogan and T and Piper and Orndorff?
You know, it was very busy, a lot of shenanigans. There really wasn't much in the way of continuity. T, he was like greener than grass. I mean, he you know.
Yeah, you could tell.
He could have used another year of, you know, when you see like a Bad Bunny now, or a Logan Paul, who, you know, make the jump from entertainment into wrestling, and how good they are.
Yeah,
that didn't happen here.
Exactly. Well, like I said, they put the Mr. T part came along pretty quick, and they generally, true story, Piper and T did not get along outside of the wrestling ring in real life. Piper was mad that he was in the ring with a non-wrestler, and Mr. T just didn't get along with Piper because he wasn't accepted. They legitimately hated each other. That's a true story there. So I thought the match was, you know, I mean, compared to what we're used to, but if you're talking about, it was a lot of hype. If you think about it, Roddy Piper had a huge entrance with the marching band, the Irish Gaelic band. You know, that took a while. Then you had Hulk Hogan come in, and you had all this pre-hype and the smacks between Mr. T and Roddy Piper. That was pretty, you know, got the crowd going. But when everything came down, it was pretty chaotic at the end, though. What'd you think with the Orndorff, right?
Yeah. Yeah, Orndorff kind of got lost in the shuffle with all of it.
Yeah.
Hey, yeah, and I forgot that Snuka came out with Hulk and Mr. T. I forgot all about that.
And the first thing he did, he jumped on the top rope, and people wanted him to superfly somebody. He ended up like nothing happened.
Right.
Like, it was just not planned out. It looked like there was so much emphasis on the hype and the promotion that the finished product was not supposed to be what it was. You know what I mean? Don't get me wrong. It was WrestleMania 1 was historical, you know. Experts will tell you that it was probably I've seen better wrestling cards that have come out of the WWF back in the early 80s that could probably top this one, both at Boston Garden, Madison Square Garden, or even some pay-per-views. But still, you know, from top to bottom, it wasn't that exciting of a card. Wrestling wasn't that exciting. I mean, everybody was just waiting for the Hogan T match is what it was. And they had to fill it up.
Even that, I mean, they got a free pass because it was the first WrestleMania. And I think people were so hyped up on the fact, oh, we have WrestleMania, that I think they kind of overlooked that. It really wasn't the best, you know, there weren't very many like really great matches on the card.
No, there really wasn't. And, obviously, you know, it's grown into that every match now is a main event type match. There's been some WrestleManias. I can't go through them all. I know the chat would love to do that, but there's just way too many WrestleManias to point out that Vince caught on to something big. It's gotten bigger ever since. And, you know, it's been turned into this mega thing where it's no longer one Sunday. It's now they call it WrestleMania season for a reason, right? From the Royal Rumble
the road to WrestleMania.
It's just incredible. So, so that's all I got for this one.
Now, you know what I mean? I have a question, Joe, and was this supposed to be a one-off for McMahon, or did, you know, was it kind of like, let's do this and see how it goes?
Like I said, the make or break, you know, it was a gamble and he won. So it'd be easier to say that if he lost, we wouldn't be sitting here right now.
Right. But
I think it was a gamble in his mind that he knew he was going to win. He knew it was a sure thing. It was just a lot of stress involved to get to that point. And I think once the facts and the figures and the numbers came in, because I don't think the final numbers came in for months as to how much money was made.
Right.
But when he realized what was happening, because don't forget, WrestleMania 2 was held in 3 locations. And pay-per-view, it was the first time that you could actually call on your phone and order a pay-per-view. So that made a huge difference. So he was on to something. There's no doubt about it. I think he knew he was not going to fail. He'll tell you that it was on the table that he could have failed. But I think he knew that it was going to take $1 million to make $1 million. And he made more than that. And now this is what's happened. So, you know. I'm not at his kitchen table that night when they're making all those calls to all over the arenas and representatives.
Yeah, I would have liked to have been. That would have been pretty interesting.
Yeah, somebody wrote a book. It's killing me that I forget who it is, but or somebody told a story. I know Linda McMahon told the story on one of the talk shows one time about that night, how they were home in Connecticut. They had left Madison Square Garden. It was a long ride home, and they were calling people. They had 3 phone lines set up in the home, or it might have been more than that, but they were just calling out coast to coast. How many people showed up? What was your gate? How much did the arena make? Real quick note, I did not forget that Pittsburgh Civic Center, they had a horrible feed issue. They had 12,000 fans there, and right when WrestleMania began, the feed was cut. So they were all issued refunds.
Oh, wow.
And fans started rioting. They had to, they had to call in extra law enforcement and so forth. It was a big deal. That was the one black eye, but that wasn't found out for a while. What happened? The feed was cut. 12,000 fans were sitting there. It was black. They were booing. They finally had to open up the doors and get them out of there, but they were all issued refunds. And I do believe, because it was available on cassette or something, that they were the first ones to get a free version of it shipped to them if they okay. wanted to. So, but that was the only glitch that I heard. No one else throughout the U.S. had any issues. I know in Boston they didn't, but you know, Boston, it wasn't just shown at major arenas. There were armories, some movie theaters, some, you know, lower type places that aren't arenas that are above armories. Those, they were there. Auditoriums were showing it. Any place that could handle a closed circuit audience got to see it. So, you know, that's why I was shocked that the 1 million people mark was a little low to me. I thought it might have been higher, but
I bet the next year was way higher.
Well, they had 3 different locations. They had pay-per-view then. So right. From the comfort of your own home, you never had to go watch a closed circuit match again. So I didn't know what closed circuit TV was until WrestleMania. Because everything else to me was like, you know, Marvin Hagler fought on Saturday nights, you know, so you saw those fights. But
it was so I moved to Hagerstown, Maryland in early 1986.
Sure.
So for WrestleMania 3 in 87, I think it was $39.95 to order it. And what I did was I invited a whole bunch of people. I charged them. I forgot how much each. And I ordered, because in Maryland, you know, obviously crabs, you know, are a big thing.
Crab cakes.
And I had like a crab in WrestleMania and beer party.
Nice.
And I actually made a few bucks and watched it for nothing.
Yeah. My first real WrestleMania party was WrestleMania 3. That was actually shown at the Pontiac Silverdome, where the time difference, it was later on in the afternoon as opposed to 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
Right.
So it was a little later. So that was kind of neat. But we had pay-per-view then. You can call up and order. I think it was like $40, $30, which
was expensive. $39.95.
It was expensive. That's expensive back then. And we watched Hogan Slam Andre, and it was an unbelievable pay-per-view. And, you know, it changed the game. It changed how you watch these events now. So, but it was fun looking back. WrestleMania weekend, here we go. SmackDown's already on the air. The when are their Slammies? Did they already show the Slammy Awards?
Oh, I don't know. It's a good question.
I got to look at that. Anybody know if they closed the – yeah, Jet Will. Closed Circuit became big in the 70s. Yep, big boxing matches. I remember Hagler, Hearns, all those. I do remember some pay-per-view, but you had to – it was like Starcase or Showcase or something like that. It wasn't on cable. Let's put it that way. It was on something else, but you had to have access to it. But nonetheless, yeah, it all changed. It all changed.
What do we have, like about 30 hours of wrestling in the next 4 days, counting today?
If you count NXT and if you count SmackDown –
in the Hall of Fame.
Hall of Fame, Slammy Awards, NXT tomorrow, pre-show, WrestleMania post-show. Next day you have pre-show, WrestleMania post-show, then Monday Night Raw, over 36 and a half, 37 hours of WWE programming at your fingertips.
That's pure crap to a wrestling junkie.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be a long weekend. I think sleep will be hard to come by, especially I think if, you know, even if one third of our predictions come true this weekend, no one's sleeping tomorrow night and no one's going to go to sleep on Sunday night. So,
you know, but really, you know, Joe, the great thing I think is, you know, our combined age, and I'm not going to say it in total, but it's over 100 years.
Jesus. Christmas.
Yeah. Believe it or not. Right. Yeah. But we're sitting here like little kids excited for this thing. I think that's great.
Because we were exposed to it at a young age, or a decent enough impressionable age, that it was a big thing. My parents knew when WrestleMania weekend was coming. They knew it. I was having people over. I am watching it. Even the years that I wasn't into wrestling, when my kids were first born and real life catches up to you for a while, always tuned into WrestleMania. Always knew when WrestleMania was coming up. And you couldn't miss it. They were on the talk shows. No matter what you were watching back then, somebody made an appearance, whether it was on Regis and Kathy Lee or Good Morning America like they do now, or Jimmy Fallon is what that they had Reigns and Rock on the other night. They were all over the place. So you knew when it was WrestleMania season. Now it just starts a little bit earlier. Now it lasts a little bit longer. Obviously, WrestleMania is 2 days now, but between the WrestleMania world, the WWE world, and all the events that lead up to it. I mean, Philadelphia was the mecca of professional wrestling yesterday. You had a blood sport thing going on. You had a lot of indie shows take place. Philadelphia was the hotbed of wrestling and shoot fighting yesterday. I don't know if you saw blood sport was there. Shayna Baszler took on Masha Slamovich in a match that was just unbelievable. Lana was front row. Braun Strowman showed up. Wow. Nia Jax was there. CM Punk was sitting at a table. It looked like one of those shows where, you know, it was a private event, but yet everybody was invited to. Okay. And it was great having all WWE and just look at the video that came out the other day. I showed it. Drew McIntyre working out in Philadelphia at a gym, being spotted by AEW's Brian Cage. Like, you got these crossovers going, and only during WrestleMania week can that happen. It's incredible that they can do that. And they got away with it. Shayna Baszler is a current WWE performer. She's taking on an independent wrestler named Shayna Baszler. It was shoot fighting. It was blood sport. There were no ring ropes. It reminded me of NXT Underground. And they went at it. She made Masha Slamovich tap. Masha Slamovich, by the way, is a great Russian wrestler, and I've actually had the privilege of working with her on What a Day a few years back, and she's getting exposure now that's just unbelievable. So it's great to see the crossover, even the people watching it. You know, if you're sitting there and you get tickets for this event that's happening at 2 o'clock on a Thursday afternoon during WrestleMania week, and you have A-list celebrities attending, and you look over your one shoulder, you see CM Punk, then you see Lana or CJ Perry in the other, and behind you is Nia Jax. I mean, it's a big deal. It's a big deal. And it just makes it more hyped up. You know, today was media day at WrestleMania, Wrestling World, WWE World, excuse me. And there was a lot of interviews being done. Over 250 people from the press were there covering this. So it's incredible. And by the way, a Japanese wrestler by the name of Julia was walking around WWE World yesterday with her promoter, Ozawa. So, I mean, that was pretty cool. Rossi Ozawa, I think his name is. I'm sure a lot of the wrestling experts know who Julia is. She's been on the WWE's radar. She's like the next, she's the female version of Okada, I think. That's all I can get. She's a very talented athlete. She's she was going around taking pictures with fans at WrestleMania. WWE Hall of Famer Jazz from TNA. She's walking around today doing the press work. You know, so it's great to see that come WrestleMania, every faction of the wrestling world is allowed to take place. And I think that has a lot this year to do with the fact that, and I hate to say it because it's a strange twist, because Vincent Kennedy McMahon has not been around or seen or being involved with this WrestleMania. So Monday night's Raw is looking to be even more amped up, because last year's Raw, traditionally, as we all know, the Monday night Raw after WrestleMania is chaos and great and all mixed into one. And last year it totally sucked because Vince McMahon came in at the last minute with 50,000 script changes and screwed the whole night up, and it would turn into the worst night of Raw ever. Not that there hasn't been since then.
We don't have to worry about that now.
But now it's just, and you're getting all this crossover, and it's great. I think it's really great for the sport. And, you know, I think I've talked enough here.
Well, and you know, one more time, I'm going to plug that you are going to be doing the post shows for WrestleMania for Sports Kita. And Jimmy Farrow, from our family, was on ESPN 104.9 from Panama City. This afternoon doing WrestleMania predictions.
That's awesome. This is great. That's what it's all about, man. We all get to do what we love. We get to talk wrestling because we were exposed to it at such a young age, and it made us happy. And look at it, it's making us happy now, and it's putting smile on everybody.
You know, if I wasn't so old, I'd pinch myself, but I have to worry about clotting, so I don't do that.
So blood thin as a fork. Come on.
Ozempic, whatever it is.
All right, folks, that's going to do it for us here at Wrestling Remember. Benny, thank you so much for joining us. Bruce, if you're listening, pay that goddamn Wi-Fi bill. I don't know what the hell. He didn't even check back in, so I don't know what's going on here.
Didn't
check back in.
Doc is pay there.
Yeah, no kidding. And Phil DeCesare had the night off. He took his son to a baseball game tonight, so good for him.
He had approved PTO.
He had approved PTO.
Bruce was an
no-call,
no-show.
Yeah, Bruce showed up. Like I said, he's the guy in high school who used to sell concert tickets out in the hallway.
No, he cut the rest of his classes after lunch.
There you go. All right, Benny, we'll be chatting over the weekend, I'm sure. Right. Enjoy your WrestleMania weekend. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in live and on the replay. Everybody in the chat, thank you so much for supporting Monty and the Pharaoh Baby Cakes. Thank you for your donation. Ja Will, everybody, Little Patty, everybody. I haven't scrolled through them. Jason. Everybody's in the chat. B40, Mike was chatting for a while there. Everybody who chimed in, Maria, we miss you. Loose Cannon, God bless everybody. Have a great WrestleMania weekend. Hey, enjoy it. It only comes once a year. Well, actually, twice now because it's Saturday and Sunday. But I know, Benny, I was waiting for you. That's what she said, but I guess I won't get that from you.
I've slipped up. Now you got to dock my pay, too.
No, that's all right. But you guys have a good weekend, and thanks for joining us, everybody. What a day.